Fortunately, someone is available to explain all this technobabble. Your translation expert, Benjamin Rockwell, is here with Computer Talk Radio.
Tons in store for you this week here on Computer Talk Radio. Keith Emcedor is going to give us a quick rundown on the iPhone 16e. Yes, that's the latest Apple announcement. Marty, he's going to talk about the Shox OpenMeet UC bone conduction headset. And Steve Keske and I are going to talk about the most astonishing tech across our lifetimes. And we've got a number of listener questions as well. Trisha, a rundown of all of the major streaming services. Samantha, local backups versus the cloud. Why would we bother with local backups? I'll answer that one. Miller wants to know if upgrading his PC to Windows 11 is safe or necessary. Megan has an issue with her smartphone not charging. And Mike, he wants more items in regards to leveraging tech in order to stay ahead at work. On the scam series, by the way, LinkedIn friends, they may not be real. All of that on this week's Computer Talk Radio. If you miss any of those, you want to check out the podcast. It is available at ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. The phone number, by the way, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. Let's dive into the news and... well, we've got an interesting one here. Uber and DoorDash, they're battling, and they're battling it out even beyond out there in the streets delivering food to us. This week, Uber launched a lawsuit over anti-competitive practices against DoorDash. Now, the allegations against DoorDash include a number of different things, mostly revolving around how they were threatening higher commission rates to any vendor who is also on Uber Eats, or threatening to demote results in the, you know, for restaurants who dealt with Uber. You know, you go search for one of these restaurants on DoorDash. Oh, I can't find that restaurant. It's down lower. Why? Uber. Anyways, DoorDash actually is clearly the big one in the delivery game. They actually claim some 90% of the major restaurants in the U.S. are on their platform. I personally have been less than thrilled with either experience getting food from either location. With my most recent pizza delivery from DoorDash, it was just left on an ice-cold doorstep without so much as a doorbell ring or a notice from the restaurant or DoorDash that I had my food. It was not thrilling. Amazon... well, they bought MGM Studios back in 2022. Along with that purchase were so many different film and TV episodes, and this was really forming up a very massive library for Amazon, which they haven't translated as much onto the streaming service as I would have hoped. One of the properties that they gathered up in that purchase was that of our favorite spy, James Bond. 007. Anyways, for a while, Barbara Broccoli, the daughter of Albert Cubby Broccoli, had retained a massive amount of the creative control over the MI6 spy franchise. What could they do with James Bond? Who could they cast? What are the storylines they would be allowed to do? What are the different things that make James Bond, James Bond? So, yes, Amazon has worked out a deal with them to, with Barbara and also her cohort, to assume creative control and move forward with more spy movies in what is probably the most famous movie franchise out there. Details aren't fully clear, but I'm guessing some of the controls were put in place also that James Bond, an iconic character, will likely continue to live on for many more movies. Little trivia for you. $7.8 billion. And that's without even factoring in for inflation over certain years and stuff like that. That's an amazing franchise there. Amazon is shifting strategies, and this one's kind of interesting. You know, we used to go onto Amazon, we would search for a brand, we'd find the product and order direct from Amazon. Well, now Amazon has found ways to shift you to that brand's own website. You would order there, and through this new feature of Buy with Prime, you get the same delivery, the same free delivery, customer support, and return options that you'd get directly from Amazon. So it's interesting how they've put this design into operating as more of a shopping search engine. They still get paid, but they also manage to focus specific sales into the brands involved, as opposed to you search for like Citizen watches and all of a sudden you're getting responses for all of the different other watches, including Citizen. So this is going to be interesting. Of course, Amazon is still making all kinds of money off of this, so it's going to be good for them. Now, noise-canceling headphones, they've been the rage for decades now. I'm not fully thrilled with them, but that's kind of just my own personal decision, I guess. I don't know. Feelings, whatever you want to call it. This week, a number of outlets started bringing up hype around people who may be experiencing problems due to APD. Now, what is APD? It's auditory processing disorder. And this is where people struggle to hear, well, not really hear, but rather process the sounds and words around them. They've got great hearing. They just can't focalize, I think that's the right word, and discern what people are saying or what different sounds might mean around them. The description is overwhelming noise, a struggle to discern and separate out all of those things that we're hearing from the important things. The small print here is that this is actually still a very early stage of this, an ongoing discovery, and really a theory only that this has to do with noise-canceling headphones. But it's at least worth paying a little attention to what this idea is, and if you know anybody who's having problems, they can hear, but they struggle with certain things. So we'll see how this all rolls out. We'll see how this plays out. You know, the doctors have to go through. They have to test people. They have to evaluate, are we really seeing something, or is this just kind of a certain set of anomalies that are popping up along the way? So I'm going to be tracking that because, well, I love sound. And I've talked about that many times in the past. This week, Microsoft introduced a quantum chip called Majorana 1? Majorana? I don't know. It wasn't quite clear what the pronunciation of it was. And there was a lot of hype over this. And this is really only a minor glimpse. However, as they really start to indicate that, well, it's got a lot of the elements to scale up, to bring this on up to a really world-class quantum chip, that the idea here that they're working with is really 5 to 10 years off before it's even ready for practical usage, for instance, like in our homes or in our businesses. The proof of concept chip actually, it only produces 8 qubits or quantum bits, which is rather low for typical quantum computing, where a lot of folks out there, we're talking Google and NVIDIA and the rest of the chip manufacturers, they're coming up generally with 50 to 150. So there's a slew of hurdles ahead. From scaling this up, they have temperature issues they've got to resolve, and they have to develop programming languages to take advantage of the architecture. And as I've kind of indicated, all of the big names in tech are chasing this idea, so this is just one more step, and I'm not all that thrilled with all of the hype that's been pushed in across all of the news media about this chip. It's there, and it's just another chip to me. Now, a company by the name of Humane, they came out with an AI pen a while back. And this was a $700 tech device that you would wear on your shirt. And like so many other tech companies, they really didn't think ahead. Yes, this thing has AI, gives you answers. Yes, it's just like OK Google or Hey Siri or Alexa, whatever it is. But it's its own little device and it doesn't have an actual screen. It's got a little projector thing in it. Not even really great answers. Reviews were horrible. And it was also a poor product delivery with samples being placed on ice before showing it to investors and purchasers. So this week, it was announced that the 10,000 or so purchasers had 10 days to download any data and that it would be bricked by the end of the month. Ouch. Yeah, HP purchased the intellectual property for a small sum of change, but like so many oddities, Humane was never going to make it. Coming up next, Miller. He wants to know if upgrading his PC to Windows 11 is safe or even necessary. That'll be here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at ComputerTalkRadio.com.
You know, on and off, you take really good care of your listeners.
Miller reached out to me, is it safe or necessary to upgrade from Windows 10 to Windows 11 on my HP desktop computer? Miller reached out to me at ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. Now, in Miller's case, everything about his question, except for the HP desktop computer, I'm going to mostly leave that off. It's all about Windows 10 to Windows 11. And... let's divide this up into a couple of different parts. He asked if it's safe or necessary. So let's start off by saying any operating system upgrade has potential to cripple, to destroy, to wreck your computer. This is any time you're upgrading. And some of my mission-critical programs and configurations are special software, enough so that I'm actually concerned about my switch personally from Windows 10 to Windows 11 on my primary system. Now, I've got other systems around here that are running Windows 11. This is my primary system, the one that I use the most for personal use and also for this radio show. So what I would do is back up my important files before upgrading to avoid any unexpected data loss. This is so key. Everybody dives in. They say, oh, yeah, I'll just upgrade. It's not a big deal. Windows has popped up. Microsoft has popped up this nice little window. Says, oh, it's so safe. It's so easy. And I don't trust it. Why? Because I've gotten burned before. Everybody's gotten burned if they've been around for long enough to do some of these upgrades. So if you haven't been burned, it's like the motorcycle quip that they say. It's not a matter of if, but when you're going to get into an accident. And I say that having traveled over 250,000 miles on two wheels. So trust me, it'll happen. Oh, yes. And yes, I've had a few accidents along the way. Anyways, I have been resisting personally this upgrade from Windows 10 to Windows 11 because of the aforementioned issues. I've been just struggling with the idea on it, but I will at some point, sometime in the next couple of months, I think. So let's go into the, is it safe? So as long as your desktop, in Miller's case, is HP desktop, as long as it meets the minimum requirements for Microsoft Windows 11, so there's a couple of different things. You have to have 4 gigs of RAM. You have to have a supported CPU. You have to have something called TPM 2.0. You're already in the right direction. I do not suggest upgrading if you have to do any special tricks to get around the requirements. Like, there are tricks out there to get around that TPM 2.0 requirement. Don't do that route. If Microsoft doesn't trust your hardware, then you need to start planning for a brand new PC. There is something called Microsoft's PC Health Check. This will allow you to confirm compatibility before you dive into this, before you take this leap. Now, there are benefits to upgrading. There are the stated claims from Microsoft, and that includes enhanced security. They talk about stronger protections with built-in features like virtualization-based security and encryption. They talk about the modern interface. They say it's a cleaner design. I don't think it's cleaner. As a matter of fact, I reverted on the systems I do have on Windows 11. I've reverted them back to the appearance of Windows 10. For a lot of different things. They talk about the refreshed start menu. No, I've moved that start button all the way over off to the left-hand side, just like it's been for over 20 years now. Windows 11 used to be bad, but it's now, you can set it to be very similar to Windows 10. You just have to do some tweaks. There is some better performance under certain hardware. So Windows 11 may run faster and run more efficiently on certain systems. I will tell you that there is another benefit, and this is beyond the Microsoft item, although Microsoft is kind of forcing this, and that is that Windows 10 end of life right now is scheduled for October of this year. They may extend it, but they may not. They've done it every time in the past, but we're starting to look at this and they're so anxious to move us all the way off of Windows 10 and into Windows 11 that they may not allow us this extra chance like they've done so many times in the past. If you solve this now, and if you can, upgrading now gets you ahead of the curve. We're also, there are some rumblings that they may at some point say, you know what, if you didn't upgrade to Windows 10, Windows 11 from Windows 10 yet, we're not going to allow it. I don't buy into that so much. There's a lot of rumbling from my peers that say they will. I don't know. There are potential downsides. And that is, there are hardware limitations. Older desktops may struggle with performance. They may not be as compatible as Microsoft's PC Health Check says they are. There is some software compatibility along the way. If you've got some older apps, you've got some older hardware, the drivers may not work seamlessly with Windows 11. If you have anything that's older around, printers is usually the big thing I'm hearing about. But any special applications you rely on, this is something you need to be aware of as you're moving into this. There is also a learning curve. The new design is going to take some getting used to, especially if you're really comfortable with Windows 10. There are adjustments to convert many portions of the design back to your comfort level. Like I said, moving the start button all the way over to the left and things like that. But these adjustments, they take time to find them. They take research. They take some energy. So if you're doing this upgrade, I want to make sure that you are allotting enough time before you actually have to use that computer. You have to allot enough time to A, fix all of the little things, the little nuances that you might run across. I'm going to say figure 4 man hours at least, maybe even 6 man hours to kind of get it tweaked the way you want. I also want to allow a few days in there as well. A few days in case you run into problems and you have to go on out. You have to buy a new computer and you have to do all of that effort to move all of your data over from the old computer to the new computer, from your backup to the new computer, whatever it is. So you have to make sure that you take your time. This isn't something that you're going to just do. You're going to press a button and it's going to happen in an hour and it's going to be all done and you don't have to worry about it again. No, this takes planning. This takes effort. This is not one of those things where you go on out, you buy a brand new car, you jump in it and you drive away. No, you're going to need to buy the car, if you will. You need to read the entire manual. You need to sit and play with all of the different features in the new car. Just like that. I swear, I want you to be very careful about this. Is it necessary to upgrade? That's the other part of what Miller was asking. And no, not immediately. We do have until the end of the year. Until October. I think it's October 14th. If your current system runs smoothly and securely, you don't have to rush. But you do need to plan this out. You need to think about this very carefully. If you plan to keep your desktop for years to come, upgrading does ensure long-term compatibility and support. So I don't want you to get stuck with an outdated system. Bottom line, when should you upgrade? If your system meets the requirements and you're excited about the new features, upgrading now is safe and worthwhile if you follow the backup process, if you think about planning enough time there. If your computer is not compatible, you're going to stick with Windows 10 until you go to the point where you're going to replace your hardware. But I would start that planning right now. I would start budgeting and planning out which hardware that you want. This is kind of something that we're going to be forced into. Windows 12, we still haven't heard anything about it yet. And that actually is something that concerns me even more. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them, screwdrivers and other tools, yep, cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Keith Emcedor joins me now, and as we do every time, Apple produces something new for us to talk about, some new exciting event or announcement. Keith is ready and waiting to talk about it.
Well, you know the rule, Benjamin. When news breaks, we fix it.
That's a good old throwback from way back when. Well,
there it is, isn't it?
Oh, man. All right.
Well, let's talk about what's new from Apple this week, Benjamin. We have been anticipating a replacement for the third generation iPhone SE, and a lot of people thought it would be a fourth generation iPhone SE. And yeah. A few even speculated it would be called the iPhone Air, which would grow up there with the iPad Air and the MacBook Air. But you know what they say about speculative journalism? It's as good as fiction. And it turned out to be earlier this week, Apple introduced the iPhone 16 E without telling us what the E stands for. You know, it could be extra, could be economical. Who knows what it means? They didn't really tell us. But what this is not an economical replacement for the iPhone SE. It's not a fourth generation SE. And this really is a series of lows and highs, Benjamin, because there are some really cool, interesting new features. And yet there are things that are dramatic steps backward. Like, let's start something basic. Price. A lot of people like the entry level, small form factor, low price of the iPhone SE. You could get an iPhone SE with the third generation SE for as little as $429. And that would be an iPhone that would run iPhone apps
pictures
with and do things an iPhone does. And you didn't have a four digit price tag to get there like you do with the Pro and Pro Max models of the 50th.
But instead, they bumped that up. And that's not even a simple small bump. That was a $170 bump.
It was
$600 basically.
Mm-hmm.
Plus tax. Plus, if you've got the expansion, and if you've got to pay, and you got to buy the charger and the cord and the case.
It comes with a cord. But after 18 years of iPhones, Apple's made the assumption you've got a charger or two in your drawer, and
right. What about MagSafe? Why did they leave off MagSafe of all things?
Well, you know how I feel about cheat charging, Benjamin. That's a discussion we'll have another day.
I know, but it's something that everybody has been doing, and all of a sudden Apple goes, we're leaving.
No, everybody hasn't been doing it because I don't do it.
I meant the manufacturers.
Rogue, and I don't use it because I plug in with my USB-C cable.
No, I meant the manufacturers. Entire Samsung line, the entire Apple line, and all of a sudden, the Apple line is ditching. All right, fine. Go on.
Let's talk about the iPhone 16e's features, Benjamin. In addition to a $599 starting price, they've bumped the size of the display from 4.7 inches to 6.1 inches. Now, you might say, that's really great. But I'm thinking of the target demographic here, which is like your mother-in-law who wants a tiny little thing that slides into her purse. And the 4.7-inch form factor was an attractive feature, as was the home button. Now, we've been using the 10 and 11 and 12 all the way up to the 16 for the last umpteen number of years. So we've gotten used to not having a home button anymore. But there is a demographic of Apple users who is actively missing it already. But that having been said, it does have Apple Intelligence. So it does take advantage of some of the AI features.
I'm going to go back. I'm going to quote you from whatever it was a month ago when you said nobody amongst your clientele is excited about Apple Intelligence.
That's true. But I'm trying to give you one of the pro features.
Sure. Okay. Go on.
While it does have the same A18 chip that the other iPhone 16 models have, the iPhone 16 Pro has a 5-core GPU, and the iPhone 16 Pro Max has a 6-core GPU. This new iPhone 16e only has a 4-core GPU, so it's a lot smaller. It doesn't have the camera control button on the side that the other 16 models have. It only has a single camera. It's a 2-in-1 camera system that, while the other ones will do 0.5x and as up to high as 5x optical zoom, not even talking about digital zoom, this only has one or two. And whereas you can get the cool, product red, where you can donate to charity by when you buy that model. You got two color options here, matte black and matte white, and nothing else in between.
Okay. White. So is the case plastic or is it glass?
Well, they are selling. They are. I don't even know. I think it's glass, but they are selling some cases from Apple in multiple colors at $39 a pop. You can do cheaper on Amazon.
Yeah.
You can do better on Amazon. It does do emergency SOS via satellite, and it does do messages via satellite. So those are some cool features to have in an emergency. But I'm really kind of, you know, it doesn't have any macro photography. It doesn't have any high-end spatial video or spatial photos. But it does do Dolby Vision up to 4K at 60 frames per second. So, I mean, there are some bumps in performance. But again, for the phone that was supposed to be the entry-level loss leader, price leader, for somebody who wanted to join the iPhone club but wasn't really a tech geek married to, I want to have an iPhone, for $429, it was a way to get into the iPhone space.
Sure.
And now it's $600 just to get in.
So, yeah.
It's lacking a lot, and at the same time, bumping the price. So I'm not really sure how I feel about it, but for a little bit more, you could have an iPhone 16 with a greater color palette, better cameras, and a greater number of options.
Yeah. Now, this is this finally eliminates the Lightning cable, too. This is USB-C.
It does, and it is. In fact, another thing, it doesn't even have the dynamic island. It still has the notch up top of the screen.
Oh, man. You know, I haven't looked at it a whole lot, but I'm sure you and I will offline discuss this a lot more in the coming days.
As for now,
this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Seedorf.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
Phone number 888-NERD-888. That's 888-637-3888. I'm here to answer your computer questions, your technology concerns. If I don't answer the phone, that's okay. Do leave a message and I will get back to you. Marty Winston joins me now. And Marty, we have both been dealing with this brand since its previous name.
How shocking, I know.
Okay, take it away. There you go.
The brand, everybody, is Shokz, S-H-O-K-Z, which used to be Aftershokz, and they changed the brand name. So if you have one, you have the other. But if it still says Aftershokz, you might want to think about checking out their newer stuff.
I'm going to have to because, that's exactly my case here.
and for you, you have an OpenCom. Is that correct? OpenCom headset?
I don't have my hands on it right now. I have no idea what this comes from 14 years ago or something like that.
Does it have a band around the back of your head?
No. Wait. Yes, it's a band around the back of my head. It's wired. It is one cable.
I get that. The newest thing that will replace that for you or anybody else who has the OpenCom series, there's an OpenCom UC2 2025 model. I've asked them to get me one for review. Mm-hmm. One of the big differences is it charges using a standard USB-C fitting.
Okay, nice.
It's also brilliant. at noise reduction, really good at vocal quality. I love this brand for that. And the UC2 that I have is pre-2025, so it's got the little magnetic thing, charger. We're off on a tangent for most people here, but what I wanted to lead to, this OpenCom UC2 is my all-time favorite Bluetooth headset. You know, noise canceling is outstanding. No one ever hears background noise like fans or running water. Voice quality is outstanding. And that's a repeated assessment from several very cranky perfectionists when we're on the phone and I ask. Now, this doesn't block your ears. It's using bone conduction. It's outstanding. Keep full awareness of ambient audio like oncoming traffic. And a full charge lasts a full Marty day. You know, its spoken report may change from battery high to battery medium, but I only ever heard low once and never heard it quit.
Okay.
So, all right. That fits my day.
A good lifetime on the battery. That is ideal.
Now, they just brought out a new model that has some significant differences. This new one is called the Open Meat UC.
Okay.
It's also bone conduction. It's also Bluetooth. It's a heavier headset. It goes over the top of your head. It's really more of an alternative than an upgrade. It's optimized for people who spend most of their day on the phone or in online meetings at their desks.
Okay. All right.
It's not quite as forgiving of running or a lot of motion or exercise or,
It
make you go all over town. Right. And it's not always, hat compatible. Depends what you like to
wear. Okay.
All right. It has some quick swap pads between the over the head band and your head, and it comes in three widths. So they're trying to help you get a good fit. And they just pull right off and push right on. There's no adhesive or little clips.
You know, I like it when manufacturers think ahead and they try to accommodate the fact that some people have smaller heads and some people, like mine, it's a swelled head. It's always been swelled head.
I don't make
ear sizes.
I don't do cranial critiques. My own hat size is 7 3/4, so we'll figure that out. Same as Oprah, if that helps. Now, a couple of things about this. There's an in-use light and a one-press mute button on the mic.
Yeah.
It can support, at the same time, both a Bluetooth connection to your phone and a Bluetooth connection to your computer. And there's a companion dongle that makes that easier and allows you to get things you haven't had before, like over-the-air updates. So that's kind of cool. And you can tailor there's an app, you know. The whole world there's an app these days.
There's an app for that. We've heard that way too much, including from Keith, who keeps reminding us of that on a regular basis over and over again. I don't know why.
Maybe shocks are what he needs.
Shock therapy.
The Shox Loop 120 USB dongle is the piece. It's available separately, or there's some bundles with it. It's really, I love what Shox does with audio. They're brilliant at it. I've tried a lot of very good other things, but no one's better. And it's just a good choice. Now, the Shox Open Meat UC without a dongle is about $220 on Amazon. Bundled with a dongle, either USB A fit or USB C fit, it's about $250.
Okay.
Now, if your day has to be in one of these things, that's so bad.
Yeah.
I think it's well worth it. And I always kept a second pair. If the battery ever goes, I'm going to swap it.
Very good. You know, we should note, I forget if you did it, but Shox is spelled a little differently. It's S-H-O-K-Z. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com.
The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. One of the more recent events lately for me has been fielding a lot of LinkedIn contacts. In the last few weeks, I've had a lot of different people reach out to me, and it's been an interesting experience, and it's leading to scams. And what are they doing? How are they approaching me? And what they're doing is they're coming to me on LinkedIn. And we think of LinkedIn as just a great place to network for jobs and things like that. But then we get a lot of contacts. We get a lot of people reaching out. And sometimes it's people we recognize. And sometimes that name kind of rings a bell, but maybe it doesn't. And you're scratching your head. And they reach out and they go, "Hey, Benjamin, hope you're doing well. Long time no see." Okay, who is this? I'm trying to place this. And I look at their work history. One of the work histories I got was in a completely different field. They've never been anywhere near what I've done. So I'm really confused at this point. And then they lead forward into some other different topics. They'll go off and you're still scratching your head. You don't want to. We never want to come across as we don't know the other person. It's culturally taboo to do that, to say, "Hey, I don't remember you at all. Can you refresh my memory?" And we avoid that. And maybe we should stop doing that. You know, these people will claim to know us, but they won't give us even specific details. Even if you ask for context, I'm sure they're going to deflect more than a politician would at a press conference. It's all kinds of ridiculous stuff. And they'll talk about, "Hey, I was thinking about that project we worked on, and how are things at your current company?" And somewhere in there, you start realizing they don't have all of the information here about you. They don't understand who you are, but they're hoping to push through your willingness to get along. And they're very eager to touch base. They're very eager to catch up. They're very eager to go through and discuss all kinds of things. And that's where they're trying to lure you in. They're trying to get you to let your guard down, and then, after a bit of small talk, they're going to ask for something. Your email, your phone number, details about your work. "Hey, you know, I see that you're over there at XYZ Company. Can you connect me up with the person who handles this project or that project?" And it's just a little uncomfortable. But it feels like it's just innocent curiosity. It feels like just somebody trying to touch base, to connect up. And I'm going to tell you, you need to channel your inner skeptic. You need to verify these people before you trust them. And you should never, ever, ever share anything sensitive about yourself or about your work where you're currently at. And worst case scenario, just report them, block them on LinkedIn. Consider it a civic duty for the professional world. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about the Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows the Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.
Where's a nerd when you need one? Oh, he's right here. Guiding you on your computer quest, here is Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. Of course, the website computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. The phone number, 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-6373. 888. You can reach out at either location. We're more than happy to answer your computer questions, address your technology concerns, whatever they may be. Steve Keske helps us along the way with keeping this radio's broadest look at computers and technology. And he told me he had a question. All right. So you're going to throw a tech question at me, I'm guessing.
I know I'm going to. Well, it's not so much a tech. Well, yes and no.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
What is, in your lifetime now, what is the most astonishing technological item that basically wowed you in your lifetime?
Across my lifetime, so I've dealt with so many different things over the years. You know, this is... for me, I've been knee deep to neck deep to in over my head with technology for all of my memorable life. When we consider the fact that I took my first computer programming class somewhere in, I think it was 1980, it might have been 1981, somewhere in there. You know, I was a teenager, a preteen, roughly at that point in time. So, you know, so I have to look at a lot of different things. I have to address the different concepts that came along through all of that technology. If I were going to point to one true technology pivot point, it would actually have to be when we took the idea of a computer being able to access the internet, being able to do very good computational abilities, to load applications on it, and then we added in the ability to do email. But also, along with that, we put in the camera, the video camera, put a phone into that, added in all kinds of different features. And yes, of course, I'm referring to the true smartphone, the advent that was presented by Steve Jobs with the initial iPhone, even though I didn't go with the initial iPhone. And part of that was there was no way I was going to drop Verizon at that time and go to AT&T. I dropped AT&T because I couldn't get coverage at my home or at my office from AT&T, which was really weird because AT&T had fairly great coverage everywhere else. Verizon did have coverage at both of my key locations. So I said, all right, I'm sticking with Verizon until the iPhone comes over to Verizon. I figured it would eventually, or somebody would come up with a replacement. And yes, eventually we did wind up with the iPhone over on Verizon, and everybody on Verizon and T-Mobile and everywhere else has been quite happy ever since. That was a major pivot point. Everything else, even the internet, when I got onto the internet, it was an incremental increase. I had been on bulletin board systems prior to that, and I'd been on mainframes. So a little bit of that, you're typing on your keyboard and the computations are happening elsewhere, things like that. So when I moved to the internet, at the time I went onto the internet, the amount of websites that were there were somewhere around 20,000, 25,000. As a matter of fact, one of the websites that I built was amongst the first 50,000 websites, a standalone website. That was
congratulations.
And today, you know, we've got however many, and I think it's somewhere true full websites. I think we're
knee deep in them.
Knee deep in them. forget the numbers. There's more web pages than there are people in the world, I think, at this point.
Yeah, something like that.
Especially since a lot of these are dynamic these days. So I'm going to spin that around. Well, let me ask, any questions on that? Any thoughts?
Oh, no.
Off of that?
No.
What about you? So you've been around for a couple of years longer than I have. What was the biggest leap for you? What was the technological item that made you sit back and go, wow, that was a major jump?
Well, for me, it's a little bit in hindsight.
Okay.
Because I look back at my lifetime and in computers and all that, and I'm saying, you know, the biggest thing that really sticks out is the internet.
Yes.
Period.
Yes. The internet, because truly did enable a lot of things for us. There's so much with the internet. And the internet, when I got to it, it was an incremental change. Now, what has it done since? It's been tremendous. It's shifted a lot of how we communicate, how we
communicate.
Yes. There's so many different things.
Oh, yes. So many different things. And to me, that whole concept of the internet, because I was here when it started.
Yeah.
In computers.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got into it, and I'm sitting there, I can do that? All right.
Yeah. And a lot of that, I know that you didn't arrive on the internet. I mean, you were part of DARPANET and all of that back prior, but you didn't see the internet for a number of years. You didn't come along to the internet. From memory, I think you said it was somewhere around the 98, 99, somewhere in there.
For me?
Yeah.
I got probably onto it about, I would say mid-90s.
Mid-90s, okay.
Mid-90s, something like
that. All right, yeah. For me, it was 93, late 93, early 94. So, as a matter of fact, so people used to know the name Earthlink. It was a big name as far as an internet service provider. It was a dial-up internet service provider, and they still exist, but they've kind of drifted back. but it was started by a guy by the name of Sky Dayton. And I remember that when I started with Earthlink, they were still handing out a matter of one floppy disk to get onto the internet. You would load this up on your Windows 95 machine.
Yeah.
No, I guess it was Windows 3.1 machine at that point. And you would load it up on the computer and he was handing out these discs at the Los Angeles Computer Fair himself.
Yeah.
He was the guy doing it. I met him I'm sure I met him. I can't tell you like, oh, yeah, I got his autograph, because at the point in time when I would have met him, he would have been just like any other person.
At the convention.
Yeah, it would have been. It wouldn't have been remarkable at that point. It's what he did with it later, and really the enablement that he did to allow us to get on the internet and not be tied to AOL or Prodigy or one of those other services which wanted to shove a lot of other information in front of your eyeballs and all of that. So yeah, there was quite a difference when the internet started, even just a few years in there. If you got in on a couple of years after me, the internet would have been far more amazing.
Oh yeah,
for me, it's still amazing. I would never deny that it's amazing what all we've done with it. It just wasn't the when I tried it out or when I saw it, I went, "This is a game changer."
Oh yeah.
Of course, I will have to admit, Apple, what have you done for us lately? What new amazing things have you come up with? And the answer is not a whole lot. It's been a lot of incremental, a lot of minor shifts, a lot of different things that we want them. It's great, but it's not game changers.
No, it's not game changing. Not, and Microsoft's the same way. It just hasn't hit the game changing situation quite yet. It's doing little things here and a little things there, but nothing
amazing.
Amazing.
Exactly. As for now, that's the voice of Steve Keske. I am Benjamin Rockwell. You are listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. Samantha reached out to me, and her question, why should I bother with local backups when cloud storage seems to handle everything just fine? Samantha reached out to me at 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. Now, everybody has to weigh this out. This is something that there are many people who are going to listen to this and they're going to say, you know what, I'll put up with the inconveniences. I'll go ahead and I'll deal with the downsides of this. But I am not fully convinced that the cloud storage is going to be the place where everybody wants to be. I want you to think of your files as your prized family heirlooms. I want you to think about it as all of those different things that you've got that really talk to who you are. And we've got these in our homes. We've got all kinds of different things that have been with the family for maybe a few generations. And we start thinking about them. And we start to place a certain value on them. Now, yes, you can put all of these different heirlooms into a highly secure vault somewhere, much like cloud storage. But wouldn't you feel safer knowing that you've got them right there in your own home, that you've got them, like the expensive ones. Maybe you put them in a safe. Maybe you have some level of internal security within your home that will protect things. Of course, some of these are far more valuable to us than they are to anybody coming along. And local backups aren't just about convenience. They're about control. They're about independence. They're about ensuring that your files are protected no matter what happens. All right, so we have to go down the list, and there are a number of different things here that concern me. Cloud services can fail. I have an experience where my brother-in-law used a particular service which is named after a particular item that's referenced in The Empire Strikes Back. I normally don't call them out by name, but you can probably figure out which backup service that is. And his experience was, well, you're having problems getting your files back, and all right, whatever, we're so sorry. And they just kicked him to the curb. They didn't have an interest in really saving his files or anything like that. Yes, he paid for the service. He paid for it for a number of years. And when it came down to getting his files back, they were of little help whatsoever. Outages, breaches, account lockouts, all of these things can leave you unable to access your files when you need them the most. Companies may change their terms of service. They may impose new storage limits. They may shut down completely. And that, all of those different things can put your data at risk. So I really lean towards your primary backup being something that is within your control. With an external drive or something like the network attached storage that I've talked about a few times recently, you don't rely on third parties to keep your files secure. Synology, we've done a couple of different backup solutions with them, and each of them has been really easy. Yes, you pay a one-time fee. It's depending on which unit you get. It's a matter of, full-blown NAS is going to set you back by, we'll call it $1,000, depending on your configuration and so forth. But some of these drives, the Synology B station and the B drive, those are far less expensive. And they're very simple to work with. And you own the hardware. So your files stay with you. They stay offline. They stay away from prying eyes. Right now in my hand, I have a unit which is just a little smaller than the palm of my hand. And it has all of my key important data on it. And I'll tell you, something like this is invaluable. I can have this with me if I need it anywhere in the world. And yes, I can put this off into my safe, and this one actually does spend some time in my safe, this little B drive, and it's beautiful. It's a wonderful thing. The software is just nice and basic and easy. And when I need it to do a restore or a backup, it's not far away, and it's in a fireproof location. So I like that idea. I own all of the responsibility for making sure everything is secure. Now, I also have a much faster recovery in case of an emergency. Yes, even with today's high-speed internet, our ability to download all kinds of information off of the internet because we've got high-speed cable and fiber and all of that, it still does not even begin to match the speed of these drives. Why? Because, okay, you've got a service out there. You've got a cloud storage service that's storing all of your files. Well, they have to recover their files. They have to process your files. They have to process that and send it across the internet. If a lot of people are backing up at that moment, or a lot of people are recovering, restoring at that moment, the speed of the internet, while you may have gig by gig internet, that may be delivered out to you at a matter of 20, 30, 40 megabit, a slow speed as compared to this B drive, which will give it to me pretty close to that gigabit speed. So I really like that speed there. And when you're restoring a large volume of files from the cloud, it's going to kill you. It's just going to be horrible. And the idea of this is a local backup is going to provide you near instant access to whatever it is you need to restore. There's no waiting required. Also, there's very little chance of ransomware and accidental deletions. You can work with these different units, and usually that is a great, great protector against anything. Yeah, I mean, you're not going to hook up this any of your backup drives full time. As a matter of fact, I strongly suggest you have multiple backup drives locally. Yes, you can use cloud storage. I don't find that it's all that great. It's not all that it's cracked up to be. So, yes, a local offline backup is going to save you under a number of different things out there. Local backups are going to far outlast your cloud subscription. So let's say you decide, hey, I want to save some money. If you stop paying for cloud services, all of a sudden you're losing access to that data. And a local backup has zero recurring cost after the initial purchase of the hardware. So this is really a big selling point. I think that cloud storage has been sold to a lot of us as the panacea, the wonderful solution to all of our problems regarding backup, and yet I don't see it. I really don't. Yes, I do use cloud services. Yes, I've got Microsoft OneDrive, I've got Google Drive, I've got Dropbox, and I use all of those to back up very key files, so I've got it scattered everywhere. I can do a number of different things. I can lose data in a number of different locations, but I still have a place that I can go to recover key bits of data. So, yes, I'm using that hybrid solution, and maybe everybody should be doing this. And look, I don't mistrust the cloud. I just think that the local drives, that local backup is far more of a safety net for you. You combine them together like what I do. You get the best of everything. You get that flexibility. You get the peace of mind. But you know what? You can sleep soundly knowing that your files are under your control. You're not going to lose them. And everything should be just fine. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
Trisha reached out to me. She wanted to know what I thought about the different streaming services out there, all of the different plans that are available for watching movies and television and all of that. Before I dive into this, I am not a consumer of all of the different services that are out there. There are so many different streaming services that, under the sun, and it's just amazing how many people have their hand out to give us what used to be available over the air. Well, okay, maybe not quite over the air, because they're giving it to us faster and it's on demand and so forth and so on. And when you, and I'm going to talk about the dollar amount in all of these different services that I'm going to touch on. There's many more. But when you start racking these up, they can rack up very quickly. And I do not have enough time in my life to subscribe to all of those. As a matter of fact, at this point in time, and many points in time over the course of the last 10 years, I've said maybe we don't need to have all of these. And we have disconnected a couple of services and then brought them back and so forth. But when you start racking them up, so let's go through them. Netflix, $25 a month. Disney, Hulu, ESPN. Now, I've got a bundle with all three of them together, which is really the only common sense way to do it, because they each individually cost so much. But together, I pay about officially $30, but I get a discount because I'm a Verizon customer. As a matter of fact, a lot of your AT&T, even Verizon and T-Mobile, they've got all kinds of plans. So check with your wireless provider to see if they've got any kind of plans that ring in with what you want to watch on television. Paramount is $13. I have it through Amazon Prime, so I get a discount based off of that. Amazon Prime, if you break it down, it's $11.50 a month, but then I have a ad-free add-on that costs me a few bucks more. Apple TV, $10 a month. Max, $21 a month. Peacock, which is Fox, or not Fox, it's NBC. That's another a little bit more than $11.50 a month. And just those items that I racked up based off of the basic discounts, if I had all of those, that'd be $122 a month. As it sits, I pay somewhere around $65 or $70, somewhere in there, because of the odd little discounts and whatnot that all factor in. And it's a rough number, but that's kind of what's there. I struggle with a number of the different services right now. I'm finding that we are watching not so much Disney. We're watching Hulu a bit more because it does have some of the different things that we've watched in the past or we like watching now. Netflix. We've stuck with Netflix for quite a while and we do enjoy it. It is starting to get a little bit too all over the place for us. I don't have a lot of desire to watch Korean movies or movies that are in Hindi or anything like that. They are working on more of that international flavor, trying to appeal to all of the countries. That's something that's slowly eating at me. Am I going to give it up? I don't know. I'm already paying for Amazon for package delivery and for the various services that come through that. So I don't know that I'm going to give that one the axe. But it does have a lot of different things. It also provides a vehicle for me to get Paramount for cheaper. So that's kind of where I factor that in. Keith is a big fan of Apple TV. I've looked at Apple TV. Apple TV's product, the various movies that they have there, the various TV shows that they have there, it's a limited amount of material. However, it is a very good quality material from what I have seen and what I've heard. There are a lot of fans out there of a lot of the different programs there. Keith has said pretty much as much as what I've just said just now. I've never been fond of Max or of, you know what, actually the last time I can really point to an NBC program that I really, truly enjoyed, you know, that must-see TV. I think that was their logo. It was a long time ago. When we had cable, we did not watch a lot of different programs. The few programs we did watch, my wife and I, that were on NBC were canceled very quickly. Overall, I'm going to tell you that I can point you in the right direction to a lot of these different services, but the more I dig into this, the more I think about this, the more I try to give people guidance along the way, it all depends on what kind of television you are looking for. If you've got younger kids in the house, if you've got youth in the house, Disney may be a better choice for you, especially if you are a Star Wars fan, a Marvel fan, if you're into National Geographic. There's a lot of different things that are great over there on Disney. And also when we start talking about that bundling of Hulu into that, if you're looking for sports, I mean, it's ESPN. You can't go really wrong with that. Netflix, I am moving into I could take it or leave it. We do find things on there that we like. It's great for movies, but at times they move some of those things off and move other things in its place, and it's hit or miss for me. Amazon, I'm a good fan of Amazon. A lot of the material that they've put out, especially the stuff that they've developed in-house, has been good. It's been fun. Reacher is freshly out in the next couple of weeks, or maybe it's, I don't know when it is. I'm waiting for it to complete out for them to air all of them so I can watch all of Reacher at once. But that gives you kind of an idea. It's up to you. You need to, everybody needs to do their own individual research, and I suggest slowly adding in the various streamers and removing out any that really no longer thrill you, that just don't strike your interest. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine Grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, how they impact us, and how to be better in the workplace through technology. And I recently did a question from a gentleman by the name of Jordan, and he asked about how to stay relevant in a tech-driven marketplace. And Mike reached out to me and he said, look, I do the same job day in, day out. And look, this idea of just learning new stuff, it's learning is hard. Learning is difficult. Do I really need to do this? And the answer to Mike is this. Look, yes, you do. You do not want to be left behind. You don't want to be the guy that's sitting there and goes, look, I do my job and I come in, I do my job, and I go home at the end of the day. That's not going to help you for the long term. Look at Mike over there. He's doing the job the same way he's done it for the last 10 years. Look, Mike, and I don't mean to pick on you. We all need to embrace the idea of change. We need to practice this. We should never be resisting change, especially in the workplace. And there are people who never change, and they will get left behind. There are people who change, and they'll keep up to date. I'll tell you, though, the best way to get ahead is to be the one who sees opportunity in that change, who sees the opportunity to be more efficient, to get things done quicker, to perform more of the tasks in a day than the other people. You need to find the way to be better at what you're doing. Sure, you may be doing a great job today, and you may be getting great reviews on the work you're doing, but what if you can improve that? What if you can do more in less time? That is what employers see as an absolute just benefit to the company. And you may not be in a technical role per se, but as I mentioned, as I continually mention over the course of my stint here on the radio, everybody is going into technology and they're utilizing technology. And if you can utilize technology better than the guy next to you, you will become a greater value. Technology is a tool. It's a hammer. And there are guys out there. There are roofers out there. They go on out. They go out on the roof and they put the new roof onto the house or the business or wherever they're at. And they're doing the same thing every day and they just work. But there are guys out there that say, hey, I can do this and I can be a little bit more efficient. I no longer have to use just a regular, pardon me, I'm not a roofer. I don't know all of this. So if I use a slightly heavier hammer, I can drive the nails in faster. Ooh, I can actually use one of these pneumatic hammering guns and I can put those nails in even faster. That's technology. Technology surrounds us. And we've had technology for ages. It's just an improvement. It's just a different way of doing things than we've done before. And we become more efficient with this. There are ways in everybody's jobs out there. If you're dealing with a computer for 4 hours a day, 8 hours a day, whatever it is, you may find that there are ways to utilize technology to reduce the time to do that task. If it takes you 20 minutes to do a task, but you can automate part of that task because you do the same task every day, you can spend 5 hours, 10 hours reducing that task on down to a shorter task. If you can slowly reduce that down, that task that takes 20 minutes down to 15 minutes, if you do that task a matter of 10 times a day and you've lopped off 5 minutes of that task, you have restored nearly an hour back into your day that you can use elsewhere. And there are so many different things that are out there. AI will help you with this. AI is an amazing thing out there as long as you treat AI like it should be treated, as a tool, as something that helps you be a little bit better at your job. That's going to be great. Automation is wonderful. But along the way, as you learn this technology, people are going to take interest in how you improved how you're doing work, and they will see that. And if you can explain, look, so this is how I shaved off 5 minutes for this task. I did this. If you can explain how you did it, you explain that what is a tech concept or even a complex tech concept to non-technical people, to the coworkers who aren't doing that, You become a greater asset in the workplace than the person who's just sitting there doing the same thing every day, day in, day out. Find people who can help you utilize that technology better. Yes, frequently it's in the IT department, but sometimes it's going to be the coworkers sitting next to you and you say, hey, how did you complete that in 15 minutes? It takes me 20 minutes. Strive to be a better person, a better worker, a better value to your company, to your workplace. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Megan reached out to me with a very common problem, and I get this question probably every couple of months. My smartphone won't charge even when it's plugged in. So we have to look at a few different things. We have to double check how we're connecting on up to the smartphone, and those are usually involving the cord, the adapter, and the connection point, where you plug that cord in. First off, check the cord. And this is something, hopefully you've got spare cords around, and you can borrow somebody's cord, you can go through, and basically you're going to replace out that section. And if it's the broken cord, if it's a busted cord, great, just replace it. It could be the adapter, and cords from the original manufacturer, adapters from the original manufacturer, both of them go bad. We've been running into this problem for a very long time, and unfortunately, they don't warranty these as well as they should. Oh, it's good for the next 90 days. Well, yeah, you don't run into problems until you're down the road. Right now, my personal experience with the Apple cords, they'll turn this greenish color as they start to go bad. And once they start turning green, I realize that cord is on a limited lifetime. So you basically check out the cord, find a replacement cord, find a replacement adapter. And if those don't work, the next thing I want you to do, you're going to double check and make sure that the connection point is clear. You're going to go ahead and you'll grab a pocket flashlight and you'll shine it down into that section there. Now, this is a common problem with, really common with the Apple Lightning connector, but I have seen this in a few other locations where a little bit of the connection point of that cord, it will break off inside of the connection point. But also, we get debris in there. You know, we put our phones in our pockets, we put them in, the ladies put them in their purses, wherever it's at, and it gets dirt down in there. And that dirt can keep that cord from plugging in all of the way. And that's going to prevent it from fully seating and making that connection point in there. The next item, you can take it down to the carrier, and the carrier, and it doesn't matter if you're working, you know, if you've got an AT&T for your service, take it to the AT&T store, Verizon or T-Mobile, it doesn't matter who it is, take it down to them. You can even take it down to your local Best Buy, and you can have them check that on out and just double check to make sure that it's it's proper there. Last up, if your phone is older, you may consider that maybe it's just time to replace it. Unfortunately, we're starting to get to that point where, yes, even these $1,000 items that we stick into our pockets are now being treated as waste. And it's unfortunate. They're thinking of these as a short-term, you use it for a few years and then you're done with it. And I'm not happy with that, but it's part of what we have to deal with. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.